Hey guys, and welcome to the world of Aja Pearl. It's my world, and I'm so happy you're here. So today we are going to continue with Child's Book of Life, and we are now on chapter 10. We finally reached the double digits, y'all, finally. So this chapter opens up with a reading from the book of John, chapter 14, verse 27, which reads, "Peace I what I leave with you. It is my peace that I give to you. Do not give it as the world does." A couple of weeks later, January goes to visit Hyacinth and her son Jabari. She thinks about the entire situation, including its hindsight. When she visits the Montagues, she wants to tell them her final decision in person. When the doorbell rang, Hyacinth answers the door. "January, nice to see you again," Hyacinth greets. "I'm sorry for coming unannounced," January apologizes. "No worries, come in." "Thank you." The two women walk into the living room. January sits on the edge of the love seat while Hyacinth sits on the sofa facing her. "Would you like anything to drink?" Hyacinth asks. "No, thank you," January says. "This will not take long. I have been putting up with such a fight with the Jabari and Zora situation. I had no idea that this was happening." "Please understand that Mrs. Montague, my daughter, and I are going through a lot." Well, let me read that again. "Please understand, Mrs. Montague. My daughter and I are going through a lot. I'm afraid that my baby is getting hurt again. Please, please, you know I want to protect my child and my grandchild." "You've done a fine job raising Zora. She's a fine young lady who is going to be a wonderful wife and mother because she learned from the best. Let her walk on her own, but if she stumbles, Zora knows that her mother will be there for her." "Mrs. Montague," January starts, "please call me Hyacinth." "Hyacinth, I can see things much clearer now, but I have two conditions." "What's that?" "If Zora and Jabari get married, they must finish their college education." "Done." "Then it's settled. Zora and Jabari have my blessing to get married. I'll tell Zora right away." "Oh, no." "No? Why?" "Let's make it a surprise." "A surprise?" "Yeah. I'll tell Jabari about the news, but he cannot tell Zora. I want this to be a surprise wedding." "Oh, that sounds like a great idea." "Well, I have to go and make a dollar out of I have to go and make a dollar out of 50 cents." Hyacinth walks January to the door. "Again, thank you for stopping by to have this talk," Hyacinth says. "Sure, don't work too hard," January advises. "Girl, I have no other option." When January leaves, Hyacinth is so excited that she rushes upstairs to tell Jabari. Jabari is casually laying in his bed reading a magazine. He hears a knock on the door. "Come in," Jabari says. Hyacinth comes into her son's room with a big smile on her face. "Mommy, what's with the giant smile?" Jabari asks. "I have great news to tell you," Hyacinth says. "It's about the triplets. Can they stay?" "Well, I did not get any more news about the triplets staying longer, but I have good news for you." "Really? What's up?" Hyacinth sits down on her son's bed. "Well, Mrs. Grant, Zora's mother, came by." Hyacinth starts. "And what happened?" Jabari asks. "She came to give you her blessing to get married to Zora." Really? All right. Jabari is so happy that he gets started jumping on the bed. Okay, Hyacinth begins. I know that you're happy and excited about marrying Zora, but I do not tolerate jumping on the bed. Sorry, Mommy. I can't wait to tell Zora, he said, leaping off the bed and turning and running to the phone. However, before Jabari can get to the phone, his mother stops him. Just a minute. You cannot tell Zora, Hyacinth advises. Why not? Jabari asks. It's a surprise. Say what? Her mother wants to surprise Zora with a surprise wedding. I don't understand, baby. All you have to do is get the marriage certificate and coax Zora to come with you to the CMB. CMB? Oh, the city municipal building. Right. Zora's mom and I will handle the rest. A surprise wedding? Okay. Good. I want to shoot for next Saturday. Okay, I'll get everything together. Thanks, Mom. You're welcome, baby. Don't forget to thank Mrs. Aunt. I won't. Jabari hugs and kisses his mother. Valentine and Christopher visit Orchid. She is in an inpatient program at St. Dumphia's Counseling Center due to years of child abuse from her parents. They walk towards the receptionist's desk. The receptionist is a young nun dressed in her garb. Good morning, sister, addresses Christopher. Good morning, sir. How may I help you? The receptionist replies. I'm Christopher Newkirk. My wife, Valentine, and I would like to see Orchid Willoughby. Okay, but I think she's in a counseling session. I'll check her schedule. She pulls out a clipboard labeled Orchid Willoughby, and she looks at the schedule to see that she is in her counseling session. Yes, she's in her counseling session now, but it should be done within a few minutes, the receptionist said. Meanwhile, please feel free to visit. Please fill out the visitor's log. When you are finished, you and your wife can sit and have a seat until she is back in her room. Thank you, Valentine says. Valentine and Christopher go into the waiting room. They sit side by side waiting to see the young girl. Are you okay? Valentine asks. I don't know, Val, Christopher says. I'm still trying to figure out the situation. The girl was a prisoner in her own home until she finally had the strength and courage to run away. Then she ends up running to me. You gave her a job and you were kind to her. But she was a minor. She put our whole livelihood in danger. Yes. Yes, Orchid did. However, it never happened. Therefore, Newkirk's is still standing. Yeah, I guess I should see it that way. Chris, she was wrong for lying, but she was scared. Luckily, she sought us as a refuge. Come to think of it, our kindness and generosity outweigh her lie. He takes his wife's hand and gives it a little squeeze. When we see Orchid, I'll keep an open mind, Christopher assures his wife. I will listen to her point of view. I hope you can find it in her heart to forgive her, Valentine says. Me too. About 10 minutes later, the receptionist told them that her room is the last door to the left of the right wing. As they walk down the hall to her room, Christopher holds Valentine's hand. When they finally reach Orchid's room, Christopher takes a deep breath. Remember, keep an open mind and try to understand she feels bad for deceiving you, Valentine assures her husband. Okay, her husband agrees. Meanwhile, Orchid is in her bed. She is writing a passage in her journal. The bed is dressed with a white fitted cotton sheets with a homemade quilt. The room itself is small yet cozy. It is decorated as a quintessential bedroom with pictures of beautiful scenery and a crucifix over her bed. When she hears a knock on her door. Orchid abruptly hides her journal under her pillow. When she sees Mr. and Mrs. Newkirk enter her room, Orchid is shocked to see them. Chris, Valentine, what a surprise, Orchid says, fixing herself in her bed. How are you feeling? Valentine asks. Okay, I guess. Not nicer than Newkirk's, I hope, Christopher says sarcastically. Valentine nudges him. No, Newkirk's is a wonderful place with wonderful people, which is why I feel terrible for deceiving all of you. I did not mean to cause so much trouble, Orchid replies. Valentine says, the bottom line is that there was no problem, right, Christopher? I know you are upset with me. Perhaps this is your reason for being here, but I was lost. I felt like a stranger in a strange land. Then I saw your help wanted sign. I figured if the place needed my help, I would receive payment. Therefore, I will have money to eat and a place to sleep. So you lied to survive? Christopher asks. Yes, Christopher, Orchid confesses. Before, Christopher felt overwhelmed with betrayal. He had a 15-year-old girl working at his bar illegally. Now he is overwhelmed with guilt. Valentine and Father Rector are right. There are no serious harm done, and he helped a troubled teenager in severe dire straits. Christopher confesses, Orchid, if anyone should be sorry is me. Why you, Chris? I lied, Orchid replies. Yes, you did lie, but luckily no one was hurt. Plus, I'm glad to help you. I am eternally grateful for everyone. All you showed me that God is love, and he is forgiving. My parents were wrong about God. And I know I should forgive them for their wicked ways, but my heart cannot forgive. Give it some time, Valentine says. Isham said something like that. How is he doing? Christopher and Valentine looked at each other. He is fine, Christopher says. It would be nice if he came to visit me, Orchid says hopefully. We will let him know if you asked about him, Christopher says. As of now, take care of yourself, dear, and keep reading the Bible, Valentine suggests. Sure. Chris, if you don't mind, could I speak to your wife for a minute in private? Orchid requests. The Newkirks were shocked, but they obeyed the teenager's request. Sure, Christopher agrees. I will be in the waiting room if you need me, Val. Thanks, baby, Valentine says. When Christopher leaves the room, Valentine looks at her with concern. Please, have a seat, Orchid insists. Valentine sits in one of the chairs close to her bed. So, how may I help you? Valentine asks. Orchid is a little hesitant. Well, the other day, there was an accident. Orchid starts. What kind of accident? Valentine asks. Well, I went to use the bathroom and I saw blood. Okay. I've never been scared in my life. I thought I was gonna die. You thought you were gonna die? Yes. Why would you think that? I never bled down there in my life. I was screaming and crying. I was hysterical. Oh, My goodness. Orchid, are you telling me that it was your first time you got your period? Yeah, after calming me down, the nurse explained to me that indeed it was my period. Are you okay? My stomach somewhat hurts. Those are cramps. Do you have some tea? Yes. I'm allowing it to cool off a little bit. It was way too hot when the nurse gave it to me. When did it arrive? Last week? Oh, wow. Had this happened to you? Of course. But it came when I was 12 years old. 12 years old? Why so young? Girls usually get their period around that age. You, on the other hand, received yours pretty late. You must be a late bloomer. What is that? It's someone who develops late, but I would not worry. You'll be fine. Orchid crosses her arms tight. What's wrong? Valentine asks. My breasts. Orchid answers. Do they hurt too? Sometimes they hurt when girls get their period. No, I had a horrible thought of the time when my mother noticed my breasts. She beat me so bad. Then when my father came home from work, he beat me too. What on earth? It was not my fault. It happened so suddenly. It's okay. It's okay. You have nothing to worry about. Your body is supposed to develop. It's completely normal. And it's a beautiful thing. Why is it beautiful? It is part of the Lord's creation. The Lord creates things in His image. He is good and beautiful, which makes you good and beautiful. I hope you understand that. Yes. The more I understand the Lord, the more I love the Lord. Nana, when is Mommy coming? Corinthian asks. Soon, baby. Hyacinth says with a sigh to her granddaughter. How soon? Very soon, my lovely. I don't think I want to see her, Argentina says. She was mean last time. Yeah. I don't think she loves us anymore, Mandela says. That's not true, Corinthian interjected. Mommy works hard, right, Nana? Yes, baby. Now the two of you hush yourselves, scold Hyacinth to Argentina and Mandela. Never say such a thing again. I don't want to hear any ugly things about your mother, understand? Sorry for the long pause, y'all. Whoops. Okay. Yes, Nana, the children says, together with Shane. Hyacinth and her grandchildren continue to wait for Sabine. It's 3:45 p.m., so Hyacinth thinks nothing of it until about 30 minutes later. Where is Sabine? Hyacinth thinks to herself. Suddenly, Sabine hesitantly storms into the lobby and makes a beeline to the receptionist's window to sign in her signature into the logbook. The children rushes to their mother when the grandmother simply arose from her chair. Mommy, 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 the children cheer around their mother. All right now, Sabine interjects softly as she turns her attention to her children. You know we behave better than that. Sabine lays so much shame on their hearts that the children stop cheering immediately. Hyacinth shakes her head in shame. Sabine walks up to her mother face to face. What? Sabine asks sternly at her mother. They're only happy to see you, Hyacinth advises. They need to act like they have some home training. The minute they got around you, they get all crazy. Sabine turns away from her mother and takes a massive breath with disgust, shaking her head. Sabine goes back to the receptionist's window to ask the receptionist to allow her and her children to go into one of the rooms for their visit. When the receptionist buzzes them through the door, they find a square room. They find a spare room for their stay. When the door closes behind them, Hyacinth looks in, takes a deep exhale, and sits back in her seat. Hyacinth waits in the waiting area, patiently for the triplets to return. She hates the visitations. Even though they seem to miss their mother, she knows that the children hate visitations also. For Hyacinth, it was an hour of torture. She was alone with her thoughts, and they were not pleasant. The first thought that comes to her head is the time Sabine introduced Nevin to the family. Sabine was so proud that day. Hyacinth thinks to herself, she treated Nevin like one of her damn trophies. The poor man walked blindly into a lion's den. But they were in love. I prayed their marriage would be a good one. And here we are. Nevin's depression and alcoholism drove him to his death. The triplets are going through hell. And of course Sabine, my beautiful talent daughter Sabine, cares for no one but herself. The more Hyacinth thought about the court order supervising visitation, the angrier she became. Every time I do this, I feel like it feels like torture. I can't believe Sabine is putting those babies through this. Hyacinth thinks to herself, Sabine is so damn selfish. She is so self-centered on herself that she doesn't have a damn, that she could give a damn about anyone else, but especially her kids. After taking a deep breath of despair, Hyacinth continues with her thoughts. She continues to think, as much as I love my husband, I blame him for this. He spoiled her rotten to the core. Then leads her from rotten to rancid, maybe arsenic. She put Nevin through so much hell because she couldn't get what she wanted from him. Abusing him, torturing him, taking his children away from him. How could I ever forgive her for that? Hyacinth sighs. I have to protect those children, Hyacinth continues. As long as I'm on this earth, I will do everything in my power to protect those babies from that monster. Even if that monster is their mother. About an hour later, the receptionist buzzes the door open for Sabine and her children. In haste, Sabine rushes into the logbook in front of the receptionist's window to sign out from her children's visitation. The children reunite with their grandmother, and they are happy to see their grandmother. However, before Hyacinth and their triplets have a chance to tell Sabine goodbye, Sabine is gone. What happened to your mother? Hyacinth looked around with the waiting area. I don't know, Mandela replied. I guess she left to go somewhere else. Yeah, I guess your mother did, Hyacinth said with a slight disappointment. No matter. I'm just happy to see my babies again. She bends down and gives the triplets a big hug, holding back her tears. When she releases her grip, Hyacinth tells them, you know Nana loves you, right? Yeah, the triplets say collectively. Good. Hyacinth replies, still holding back the tears. And you know Nana will do all she can to keep you safe, right? The triplets nod their heads. Good, Hyacinth answers, maintaining her composure. So who wants pizza? Yay! The children cheer. Okay, okay, settle down. Hyacinth says, settling the children down to relax. Okay, now I want you all to grab your things and let's go. Fabiola comes to Zora's house for a visit. She brings some goodies over for her from her family's bodega to the mom-to-be. All of a sudden, the phone rings. Hello? Answers Zora. Hey, Zizi, it's Jabari, Jabari says. Hey, what's up? I have a surprise for you. For me? What is it? If I told you, it wouldn't be a surprise. You'll get it on Thursday. When you finish your classes. I don't have any classes on Thursdays. Perfect. I will meet you at school. Okay, what time? You can get here around 9 a.m. Can you get here around 9 a.m.? Sure. Cool. I'll see you then. Bye. Bye. After she finished her phone conversation, Zora is bewildered over the phone conversation. That was a weird phone call, Zora says. Who was it? Jabari. He said that he had a surprise for me, but I have to wait until Thursday morning. Oh, is everything okay? Yeah, I just have a gnawing hunger these days. Fab, go get something to eat. No, that food is for you and my little sobrina, or sobrino. Fabiola puts her hands on her friend's belly and they laugh. My mom thinks it's a girl, Zora says. She's a nurse, so she would know about stuff like this. No lie, Fabiola agrees. Fabiola grabs a handful of potato chips and eats chip by chip. So, how long has it been? Zora asks. What do you mean? Fabiola asks, feeling hungry. About a couple of weeks. Zora's eyes widen like dinner plates. Why are you looking at me like that? Asks Fabiola. You don't mean... Zora says, you think... No way. No. No way. I can't be. Especially right now. There's only one way to find out. You can take one of those home pregnancy tests. We'll get the results from home. Fabiola's apprehension grows. What if Fabiola is pregnant too? What will she do? What will happen to her and Isaac's relationship? Then Fabiola concludes, I don't know, Zizi. I'm probably not pregnant. No, I'm not pregnant. This is all stress. This is all stress from... Sorry, guys. This is all stress LHU School of Design puts a lot of pressure on their students. Zora replies, Fab, you have the same signs as me. Zizi, I'm not pregnant. Okay, okay. There was a short pause. Then Zora says, humor me. Prove to me that you are not pregnant by taking a home pregnancy test. Fine. I'll prove to you that it's all stress. After lunch, Zora Grant and Fabiola Castillo go and get a home pregnancy test. They go back to Zora's apartment to do the test. Zora and Fabiola are extremely anxious. The minutes feel like an eternity. They wait until the results appear on the stick. Are you nervous? Zora asks. Why? Why would I be nervous? Fabiola asks. No. Well, for you, maybe. So, are you ready? Sure. Zora holds her hand. Remember, Fab, we will get through this together. Zora reminds her friend. Fabiola smiles at Zora, and they go to the bathroom together. Fabiola becomes scared and turns her face. "What's wrong?" Zora asks with concern. I can't look," Fabiola says with fear. "Okay, fine, I'll look." Zora looks at the stick and sighs. "Well, what does it say?" Fabiola asks. "It's positive," Zora replies. "What? Positive? Oh no, are you sure we did it right?" Zora grabs the box and reads it. "Yeah, we follow the instructions word by word," Zora says Zora. Fabiola sits on the edge of the tub and she hangs her head down and cries. "Damn!" Fabiola exclaims. "What about school? What about my career? It's not the end of the world." "It's not the end of the world," Zora assures her friend. It just feels like it. How am I going to tell my parents? How am I going to tell Isaac? He'll leave me. You don't know that. But Zizi, I'm petrified. My parents are going to kill me." Then it dawns on Zora. She's looking at herself all over again. Zora asks, "Wow, remember when we were in the hospital? I thought the same thing when my mother found out that I was pregnant. She's still not okay with it, but she loves me unconditionally." Fabiola asks, "Speaking of which, I saw Tony." "Oh, did you go to the party?" "Yeah, Isaac went with me. It was nice. Very colorful." Zora is very hesitant to ask the next question on her mind, but she asks anyway. She has to know. She asks, "Did he look happy?" "Well, not really. I think that Tony still loves you," Fabiola replies. "Oh, please. Anton is so full of Zizi. Tony's marrying another woman because he's in an arranged marriage. His parents had his marriage set up way before you and Tony met each other. He doesn't love this woman. He doesn't even like this woman." "I don't understand. Why did Tony not tell me that he was set to marry someone else?" I guess he didn't give it much thought. "Maybe when he fell in love with you, nothing else mattered." "Well, it does matter. Look at what happened. In fact, I don't care anymore. I don't want to have anything to do with him. Let him go off into the sunset with this girl." "I'm sorry, Zizi." Zizi looks at Fabiola. "No, Fab, I'm sorry," Zora replies. "I became caught up in my mess for a moment and forgot about you. Who are you going to tell first? Isaac? Your parents?" "Isaac, I guess," says Fabiola. "Do you need me to be there with you?" "Yes." "And you can hold my hand, Zizi." "Sure, Fab." Fabiola gets up slowly, and with hesitation, they both go into the living room so Fabiola can call Isaac. As the phone rings, she holds her best friend's hand tight and secretly prays that no one would answer the phone until... "Hello?" "Hello?" Fabiola replies anxiously. "Hey, baby, what's up?" "Something came up, baby." "Well, what happened?" "I haven't been feeling good lately, and? Fabiola takes a deep breath. Zora squeezes her hand. Fabiola starts. I took a home preg. You're pregnant? Isaac exclaims. I think so. Oh, man. Fabiola begins to cry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, baby. Fabiola cries. Por favor, no me dejes así. Perdóname. Isaac takes a deep breath. He replies, baby, baby, cálmate. It's okay. I'm not going anywhere. Where are you? I'm at Zora's house. Fabiola tells Isaac, okay, I'll be right there. Stay there, okay? Okay. We'll get through this. We'll get through this, baby. We'll get through this, baby. Okay? I love you. I love you too. I'll see you when I'm there. Okay, bye. Bye, sweetheart. Fabiola cries as she hangs up the phone. Well, what happened? What did he say? Zora asks anxiously. Fabiola answers, well, he said that he's coming here. Okay, but how did he sound? He sounds like he was in a panic. Oh, boy. So, what are you going to do now? He told me that he was coming here. Okay, but my mother will be home soon. If she finds out what's going on, she's going to flip. Then she's going to tell your parents. Oh no, she can't do that. I gotta get out of here. I'll wait downstairs. Are you sure you're gonna be okay? Yeah. I get it, Fab. As you can see. She walks Fabiola to the door. You're going to be okay, Zora assures her friend. At least your boyfriend didn't bail out on you. Let me read that again. At least your boyfriend didn't bail on you. I hope he doesn't after our pregnancy. Meanwhile, Fabiola rides the elevator to the lobby. She waits for her boyfriend to meet with her. Fabiola is incredibly nervous. Fabiola paces left and right in front of the door until she sees Isaac walking from across the street. She runs out to meet him, but she's afraid to embrace him. Fabiola fears that he might be upset with her. However, her fears are allayed when Isaac gently wraps his arms around her. Fabiola cries uncontrollably in his arms. He holds his girlfriend while stroking her hair. Shh. Mi amor, it's going to be okay, Isaac assures Fabiola. Pero chulo, I'm scared, Fabiola says through her tears. I'm scared too, but you have to have faith. Now, you said that you took a home pregnancy test, right? Yeah. Okay, maybe the test wasn't accurate, but we followed the instructions and everything. The test said that I am pregnant. Okay, but I still think we should get a second opinion. Let's go to your doctor. Yeah, you're right. I may not be pregnant. Isaac continues to hold Fabiola in his arms as they start their way to the bus stop. When the bus arrives, they board the bus and find two seats. They sit side by side. There is no conversation between them. They are hopeful to see the second test would be harm. They are hopeful that the second test would be harmful, and they can continue their lives with their lives. However, the thought of a baby and a future with that baby plays in their heads. They will have to make a lot of sacrifices if Fabiola is pregnant. Then the could-be looks fearful for both of them. The bus makes its schedule stops.
while Isaac and Fabiola's anxiety grows. When the bus finally reaches its destination, they start their way off the bus. She grabs his hand and he squeezes it. They walk for 4 blocks until they finally reach the doctor's office. Then Fabiola stops. Isaac keeps walking until he realizes his girlfriend is not there. "Come on, Fab, we have to do this." Fabiola looks at Isaac with sad eyes and continues to walk with him. Isaac holds her hand. She holds his tighter. As they go inside St. Anne's OBGYN clinic, their apprehension begins to grow to fear.
Okay, guys. That concludes chapter 10. Sorry for the stumbling. But tune in to chapter 11 of Chalice, the Book of Life. This is Aja Pearl. It's my world. And thank you for stopping by. Have a good day.